Is this on?
Yes, my lord.
Good. Hello, this is God speaking. Can we dial that down?
Yes, my lord.
Thanks. Welcome, new arrival, to the Eternity Ward. Please take a number and make your way down to the left or the right to the waiting room. All you need is the refreshments I made just for you. I would tell you to steer clear of the apples, they're forbidden, and the two snakes. I mean, fools, sorry, that are chewing the fat in the corner, but you probably wouldn't listen anyway. So good luck, I bless you, and on your way.
Welcome to the Eternity Ward, where we flick through old copies of Reader's Digest and chat with our buddies while we wait for an appointment with God. I'm Nick McKinnon.
And I'm Chris Adams. And how you going, Nick?
I am doing fabulously, Chris. How are you?
Yeah,
it's never good if you have to think about it.
I'm doing a lot better now.
How's your car?
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? I was just thinking, yeah, I'm feeling really good, but I wasn't yesterday.
This is what happens when you get drunk, Chris. All your troubles go out the window.
Is that what drinking is for?
Oh, I don't know. You've done more of it than I have.
No, I had to get my car registered and roadworthy, and it costs a lot of money.
Yes, it does.
But it's just bits of paper and metal, right? And plastic and numbers.
That's what the accountant tells you.
Yep. No, I'm feeling good. Yourself?
Doing well. I've had a fun day at a three-year-old's birthday party at a swimming pool, and then went to a model train show with my four-year-old and six-year-old. So loads of fun.
You dragged them along to another model train show.
I know. They just can't keep me away.
Oh, Dad!
So here's episode number 2 of the Eternity Ward.
Oh, yeah. What anniversary is the second podcast, Chris? Is that gold? Is that platinum? I'm not sure what that is.
Wine? Cider?
Yeah, that's what it is. That's every podcast though, Chris.
So our theme today is that we're going to be talking about beliefs. Do they matter? Are they important? You know, how do they shape our actions? I wanted to look at this topic because something that was raised out of last topic was sort of the impetus for this, which was that, you know, you're no longer calling yourself a Christian, correct?
Correct.
But you have a job and a working title, which is a religious title of a chaplain. How do you resolve that issue?
Yeah, well, it's funny. So chaplain was never neither a job nor a title that I sought out. It's something that was thrust upon me by either Mother Nature or God or coincidences or whatever you want to call it. I worked at Kmart for about 5 years, and I was really just doing that until I worked out what the hell I wanted to do with my life, because I don't think anyone dreams of working at Kmart for 5 years. But I did, and I enjoyed it, and the people that work there are awesome, so I'm not denigrating that. But for me, at some point, I was struggling to work out what I want to do. I'd started doing a TAFE course, doing community services. And as part of that, I got in contact with the youth development officer for the council of the area that I live in. He employed me to go and do a few different drop-in centre sort of programs around my community. And in one of those communities that I was working in, the people that were employing the chaplain contacted me. I didn't contact them. They contacted me and said, hey, we need a chaplain. You know, we've heard about you and we'd like you to come and do the job. And I basically said, chaplain? Why the hell would I want to do that? And they said, no, you don't get it. It's not a religious position. I know the title makes it sound like that, but it's really not about that. And so they invited me to come in for the interview, and I said, sure, I'll come along to an interview, see what it's about. So I went along and talked to the lady that worked for the religious organization that employs the chaplains, and also the school representatives that were on the panel, and talked to them about what they saw the role being and what I saw as being something I'd like doing, and they matched up pretty well. It may have said chaplain on the title, but it had nothing to do with running chapel services at weekly assemblies or anything like that. it's one of those jobs where in none of the schools that I've worked at has it been a religious position, even though it's got a religious title, unless you have a really broad definition of religion, which, you know, is certainly appropriate for a lot of people. I find it to be one of the most unhelpful titles going around because I think it confuses non-Christians and it confuses Christians equally. Yeah, so that's how I got into it, and I love it. I love doing it. I love working with young people. There isn't really much of a discrepancy or incongruency between the two for me because I never had any intention of going and making disciples for Jesus in any schools that I've worked in. I don't know what your experience was being a chaplain. Were you ever expected to be more religious than what you thought?
Not really. Most were really supportive. A few isolated cases of those within churches, but not my chaplaincy committee, not the people close to it. They knew the expectations that it was a pastoral care role to ensure people were travelling well and help guide and be there through the difficult years. But there were a small few who didn't get it, wanted me saving souls or bringing fresh recruits to their church. And so I had to explain to some of them that it don't work that way. And it's against the law.
That will get me fired.
But not only was it against the law, but it was also against my own principles.
Yeah.
And I think that's sort of what I wanted to talk about tonight is that, like, so you said in our last podcast that you're not a believer, but you do have beliefs. Everyone has beliefs. So I sort of want to establish, you know, what sort of things do we believe and how does that shape what we do? So, yeah, so I had certain beliefs. And so, like you're talking about conversion, right? About converting someone to a religion, that's not something. And that can come from if you believe that someone who doesn't know Jesus or God is going to hell, then, yeah, that would play out that you would want to save their soul, right?
Yeah, but no Christians believe in hell, right?
I thought most Christians believe in hell.
Why aren't they standing on street corners? Come on, Christians. Live out your beliefs.
Have you not gone by those street corners where the people are yelling and screaming at you?
You know that, like, in surveys, there's like something like 60% of Australians say they're Christian. I don't see 60% of Christians standing on street corners.
Are you saying they're all dishonest?
I am saying, I don't know what I'm saying.
it's interesting that you can say you're a Christian, you can give yourself a label, but does that really make you one? Because really I think they say a value is when you're doing an ideal that you have about 80% of the time. If you're not doing it 80% of the time, it's just this high ideal and you don't actually value it. A lot of people could call themselves a Christian, but is that a value? But can you tell someone what they are and what they aren't? You know, if they call themselves a Christian, well, okay, they've labeled themselves.
And that's what we all do.
We all label ourselves, so.
We do.
Well, but what about labelling others? Are you allowed to label others?
I don't know that it's necessarily a helpful thing, but I mean, we all do it.
Well, I mean, I've just had people tell me that I'm not a Christian because of certain things, like I don't believe in hell means that I don't have this impetus to go and save someone from hell, so I'm not on a street corner yelling at people. For some people, they think that, well, you're not a real Christian then, or they'll label me a backslider or something.
Yeah, and I think that's fair enough. Words like Christian are words that are really subjective, and all of us decide what those words mean. And so I think you're the same as me, that whenever people ask, are you a Christian or do you believe in God or any of those sort of questions, my answer is just, well, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean by the word Christian? Like, if you mean someone that hates homosexuals and wants to bomb abortion clinics and wants to picket the funerals of dead soldiers, then no, that's not me. Mm. If it's someone that wants to love their enemies or someone that wants to forgive endlessly, then yeah, that's me. The labels can be helpful in some ways, but they can also be really unhelpful because you can end up saying yes to something that you're not or saying no to something that you're not. And it can also, it feeds into this tribalism thing that I hate, this us versus them mentality where I see myself as a Christian and so therefore anyone that stands in front of me and says they're a Christian, well, they're one of me. Yeah. And anyone that says they're an atheist or a Muslim or whatever, then they're not one of me. And we end up building these walls that are really unhelpful.
So, yeah, one of the other issues with labelling yourself is that that's why I wouldn't mind being like you, not calling myself a Christian, because someone asks, are you a Christian? I say yes. They have this picture in their head of what that is. There's a problem then, even a breakdown in communication just over a few words, because they have this picture of what that is. But I guess part of why I still call myself one is I'm, even though you say that there are those other Christians like the Westboro Baptist Church, and I'm not like them, but I don't want to let them own the word. I can't own it either, you know, like singly.
I think you want to reclaim the title Christian. You want to take it back from those evil people who have taken an interpretation to a pretty dark place that you disagree with. And so you want to wrestle it back from them and say, no, no, this is what a Christian is and I'm one of them. Is that accurate or not?
Yeah, wrestle it back from them or just give them the finger. I don't know. What, you know, just I don't know if I'm that passionate about wrestling it back. I guess maybe I sound like I am sometimes.
Whereas, see, for me, I'm pretty ambivalent about that.
Yeah.
I don't really care about the label Christian. Like, I figure if there's a God up there, I don't think he cares less whether we say that we are Christians. If he's all loving and he knows everything and he's gracious and all those sort of things, he doesn't need us to worship him.
No.
He's good by himself.
And God doesn't care if we call ourselves Christians, because if God exists, God predates all of our religions. So God isn't one or the other. God is God. Religion is just sort of like this construct that we have to try and explain and try and understand and learn about. And we share certain perspectives. And I think I found a lot of the perspectives that Christianity shares really helpful. That's why I'm still there.
One of my pet joys is to tell Christians that Jesus wasn't a Christian, he was Jewish.
How do they respond?
With...
They give you the finger.
No. The Christians are far too nice for that, Chris. I find that they're quite dismissive of the idea. Whereas Jesus talked quite clearly that he wasn't coming to change anything in the Old Testament, that he was just coming to, yep, that's what I'm about. He was just a rabbi doing his thing.
I mean, that's the other reason I call myself Christian. It's not so much about the whole tradition and history of Christianity as it is about this Jesus fella.
Yeah, yeah.
I could label myself follower of Jesus, child of the light. I don't know, but whatever. But it's sometimes labels are convenient as well.
I think the thing that I find unhelpful about them, though, like I agree with what you said, but the thing that I find unhelpful about them is the tribalism part of it, that I can start to see myself as part of a group of people and therefore not part of another group of people. Whereas if my identifying characteristic is that I'm a sentient being, it's a much broader tribe. And so instead of trying to convert anyone to a religion or to a nationality or to anything else, it's more just about saying, well, we're all in this together, people. Let's sort it out. But I wanted to talk to you about being a child of light, as you said.
No.
Yeah.
That sounds awful.
Well, you said you're a Christian, so we'll go with that. There's some Christian beliefs that I'd be interested to see how that affects your behavior.
Yeah.
So if we're talking about beliefs and how it affects your behavior, I'm interested, because we've talked about the idea of a soul. And I'm not at all sold on whether there's a soul. I've got no idea whatsoever. I'll make my decision when the evidence comes in.
You'll be waiting a while.
Yeah, that's the way it works. You don't believe something until there's evidence. So I'll go with that. But with this idea of a soul, there's something that certainly your brethren in the Christian community are quite keen on putting in the public sphere, this idea of abortion. And so if humans do have a soul, and there's verses in the Bible that talked about, I knit you together in your mother's womb, that sort of thing, then how do you look at abortion, and how do your beliefs about us humans having a soul, and you even talked about last episode about your dog Pilot having a soul, about how abortion works there, and even things like euthanasia, I guess, would probably come into that as well.
I believe that this is a topic I don't want to talk about. I value not talking about this, because it's such a tricky topic.
All right. Thanks for listening on The Eternity Ward. We'll see you next week.
But there's also a part of me which doesn't like to talk about this because this is, it's two blokes talking about what is very much a woman's issue. I mean, you know, like we're all involved. But how do I feel about what? Abortion? I don't like it. Are you asking if I'm pro-life or pro-choice?
Well, it doesn't need to be that blunt. But yeah, like if a soul is involved, then presumably ending the life of a being is a more difficult choice.
Well, if you have a soul, which I think that you do, there are different arguments about when a soul might enter that development. But I can understand why you'd want to err from conception.
So it's in every sperm that makes its way up the woman's vagina?
No.
Oh, just from the moment it gets through the wall of the woman's egg.
I don't ascribe to every sperm being sacred. but a child is sacred. But can I sit on the fence? Can I... Because you're talking about tribes there. There's like the pro-life tribe and then there's the pro-choice tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Can I be pro-life and pro-choice at the same time? Is that possible?
You lefty liberal with no firm views. Make up your bloody mind.
Well, what I mean is I think you can, as a Christian, you can think that abortion is morally wrong, but you can still support pro-choice in the sense that nations that have just out and out illegalized it mean that people go and have abortions and do it in a very unsafe manner. But what certain statistics show is that, well, in comparing nations, that if you've got a good health system and access to said health system, if there's good sex education, there's opportunities for counselling, and if the economy is more equal so that a poor person, doesn't feel like it's impossible, it's been shown that all of this can have more of an effect on lowering an abortion rate than just saying no. And I'm for minimising harm as well. And I also can't impose a choice like that on someone who has a different view. So if I want to lower the abortion rate, I guess I ask, what can society do? Better health, sex education, more equality. So I'm pro-life, but I'm also pro-choice. I don't like talking about this because you can never win.
You are fluffing about, Chris Adams.
Am I?
Yes, you are.
All right, All right. I'm going to do some research here. Go on.
Good. Do some research.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't make any of those arguments about murder. You wouldn't say, oh, we just need to lower the rates of murder and we're not going to have any laws that say you're not allowed to do it. We're just going to have community development programs and we're just going to try and help these people not commit murders and that's just going to really help things. You wouldn't say any of that. You would say, no, we have to have laws. We have to say it's illegal to kill someone. If you think that this thing inside a woman's tummy is a human being with a soul, it has to be murder.
I can see it as morally wrong.
But not illegal. There you go. You looking for some confirmation bias?
I am. I definitely am.
I find myself doing that all the time.
Okay, there's a prominent Christian lady blogger. An author as well, Rachel Held Evans, and just reading it.
I love Rachel Evans.
So you love her?
I love her.
Yep.
She's got a great name.
She does. She says, characterizing all pro-choice voters as pro-abortion is inaccurate and unfair. She's saying a majority of Americans say abortion should be legal in most cases, even though nearly half believe it is immoral. So I'm not alone here. While it would be easier to debate one another if reproductive issues fell neatly into black and white categories of right and wrong, good and evil, most of us recognize this is simply not the case. I don't want to just read it. But
we do have to have black and white in terms of the law. We have to say it's either legal or illegal.
Yeah, absolutely. And so what do you...
And so you're saying it should be legal.
Well, what's going to happen if you make it illegal?
I don't know. But you wouldn't ask that question about murder.
This is a more complex, different issue. There are similarities, but this is more complex.
But it's about the ending of a life.
Yes. Okay. So what if a woman is raped and falls pregnant? Do you go from one life-changing event conceived out of, you know, hate and evil to another, or do you give them the choice to end that life?
Okay, but hold on. So if that woman was raped and then was held captive, which happens semi-regularly, she ends up giving birth to the kid because she's still held captive. Mm. If she then escapes then with the kid being out of the uterus and is now born, Well, there's no option. There's no, oh, you've been raped, so we're just going to kill the kid.
No, there is no option. No, that person is a full and legitimate person in the eyes of the law. It's a, yeah.
But so if you believe there's a soul and the safest option is to believe that it happens at conception, that human, regardless of whether they're inside the woman or outside the woman, is a human.
Yeah.
Has a soul. Mm. You can't kill it.
Yeah, I don't think you should, but...
But you can if you want to.
How do I get to impose on somebody else that choice?
Because you do. If the kid is born, you do impose that. You say, no, no, you cannot kill it, even if you want to. Even if you're pissed off at your kid because they're screaming at you and they're not sleeping and they're refusing to do anything you ask, you still can't kill it.
What about when there's a situation of a woman who is potentially or probably even going to die in the act of giving birth, which life takes precedence?
Yeah, which one does take precedence? I don't know why you're asking me these questions.
Well, you were asking me this question, so I don't know. Well,
yeah, but the difference is you believe there's a soul, whereas I don't.
Okay, this is interesting. This is more what I wanted to talk about.
Excellent.
So you don't believe there's a soul. How does that inform what you think about when it comes to this issue?
Abortion?
Yeah.
I much prefer asking you questions, Chris.
I told you I don't like answering this question. And the fact that it's two guys talking about it has led to a lot of issues because it's often the law around this issue has been made by men and it affects women. And, you know, women haven't had a lot of a say in that process. So there's been a power imbalance there. And so I just want to say, I'll just stay out of this one.
No. I understand what you're talking about. Like, obviously, women should have a say in it. Like, it's not like men should have the only say. That's ridiculous. But the idea that men should step completely out of it is, I think, equally ridiculous. So what was the question?
If you don't believe there's a soul, does that change the way that you view this issue?
So for me, it comes down to consciousness, I guess. How much the being is capable of experiencing pain, not just physical pain, but any sort of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so the higher level of consciousness the being has, the more suffering it can be inflicted on it, the worse it is. So treading on an ant is nowhere near as bad as treading on a dog.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're talking about a sperm that has just gone into the egg of a woman, who cares? It doesn't have any consciousness. So take it away. I don't think it matters. Now, obviously, there's an increasing amount of consciousness as the fetus develops. And so at what point that's okay and what point that isn't okay, I would leave that to the doctors because they know more about that than I do. I agree with you that it's not a easy black and white thing and there is complications there. But yeah, I think we should leave it to people that know what they're talking about medically as opposed to people who just read their Bible and say, this is wrong. And I don't know exactly how long it is, but there's a fairly significant time where there isn't a brain. If you can take it out before it has a brain, well, who cares? There's no soul there, so it's not feeling any sort of pain. I don't see any problem with that whatsoever. And, you know, obviously there is cases like you're talking about rape, or if there's medical issues with the mother, then to me it's a no-brainer. Even things like, if a woman is in such a poor place, not necessarily financially, but any sort of way, if her life is in such a state of disrepair that she just ain't going to be capable, she feels herself, not that anyone else can say that about her, but if she feels that she just won't have the love required to raise this kid, then she should be able to get rid of it because it's causing her pain and emotional torment and all that sort of stuff. And if the baby doesn't even have a brain, who cares? There you go. That's what I think.
Okay. Interesting.
The scary part is when you're talking about different levels of consciousness, at what point is a dog more conscious than, you know, a baby? At what point does a human baby become more conscious than a dog? That can be a scary question. Atheists don't want to answer that question, Chris.
They don't want to?
No. No, that's the sort of question that can get you very bad headlines. Richard Dawkins supports killing live babies.
Just on atheists, is atheism a form of belief? I've seen forums where people will get quite up in arms about the fact whether, you know, atheism is a belief or a disbelief. Like you say, you don't believe in a God at the moment.
Can I put a little disclaimer in there? So when people say they don't believe in God, often what the person on the receiving end of that hears is they believe there isn't a God, and that is not what I believe. I don't firmly believe there isn't a God. All I'm saying is I don't know. If God's out there, he slash she has made it completely confusing to me as to whether they exist. They have not made it clear. So if I say I don't believe in God, it's not me saying I know there is no God, or even that I don't think there's a God. When God taps me on the shoulder and says, "Oi, Nick, I've been here all along," then I go, "Brilliant. Yep. Thank you, God. That's all I needed."
That's interesting because I don't know either.
Yeah.
But I still choose to believe, which is this strange
you
thing.
You choose to believe.
It's this strange thing. But atheism, is atheism a form of belief? Is it not? What do you reckon?
This is a really good question. I like this question. So whenever I've heard this question asked of like a Richard Dawkins type, he is very adamant that atheism is not a belief system. I agree with that in the cold theoretical sense of it, that atheism should only mean that I have seen no evidence that God exists. That's really all it should mean. And if you listen to enough of these interviews with these, you know, Dawkins or Sam Harris or Lawrence Krauss or any of those, that's what they actually say. They don't say that they know there is a God. So it's a misconception about atheism that people think that it means that you know there isn't a God. But there's just because that's the theoretical truth about atheism, it's not necessarily the lived truth. And so there are a lot of atheists who absolutely come across as just as religiously fanatical as the religious fanatics themselves. I think Dawkins can come across like that at times. I actually really like Richard Dawkins in a lot of ways, but he does come across as quite arrogant and condescending in certain circumstances.
Sexist.
Does he?
He does.
I haven't seen that.
No, I've got a lot of problems with him.
We'll have to do a pod about him.
Okay.
Then.
I do respect a lot of atheists. I have atheists that I really look up to, some atheist friends. I respect atheism a lot in one sense, because in one way it feels so much more honest. It can be more honest that you're betraying what you believe for me.
Yeah.
So, but as a belief or lack of it, can it not alter how you perceive human nature or the origin of life or everything? I mean, how you interact with all of that? Are you not potentially missing out on something?
I don't see how atheism informs any of those things. Whether or not there's a God doesn't change whether gravity exists, and it doesn't change how it functions. It doesn't change how the universe started. It might change why the universe started, but religious people going back before Galileo would say that, you know, the earth was the center of the universe, and then Galileo came around and went, "Nah, you got that wrong. Sorry, guys. Sorry, your Bible is incorrect." And the Christians were not pleased about that, of course. But atheism doesn't have any of that. Atheism doesn't have something that says the world has to be this way. All atheism says is there isn't a God. Now, a lot of atheists also tend to be scientific types, and so that can often go hand in hand with it. And to me, science is beautiful. I think you love science as much as I do. And one of the things I love about science is that instead of trying to defend its beliefs, science actually tries to undermine its beliefs at any point. If you can disprove gravity, you will be the most famous scientist in the world, or that the Earth doesn't really revolve around the sun. If you can show those sort of things, you'll be famous, and scientists won't try and beat you down. Like, they'll want to see the evidence. They won't just take your word for it. But if you can prove it, science loves to be proven wrong. One of the things that I loved, Stephen Hawking's, I watched a movie about him last night. And so he had this idea about the universe that was expanding and expanding and then would come back to a giant crunch. So it started with the Big Bang and it'd come back to a big crunch or something like that. And later in his life, he went, "No, I was wrong." And like, he was celebrated for his first discovery that it would come back to a big crunch. It was one of the things that made him famous. And then he came back later and said, "No, I was wrong. Sorry, guys. That's not really going to happen." And that doesn't take him down a peg amongst scientific people. That makes them go, "Oh, wow, he's got evidence that he was wrong before." So that's brilliant.
So I'm just going to discredit Neil deGrasse Tyson here then.
Do it.
He's one of your favorites, isn't he? He said, I actually really like this quote, but after what you've just saying, I go, oh, okay. He said, that's the good thing about science. It's still true, whether or not you believe it.
Yeah.
There are universal truths, but yes, we can think maybe we've got them and then find that there are, that we're a little bit off the mark or something, but...
So what he's saying with that sort of thing is, like, there are people who think that vaccinations cause autism or that climate change is just a hoax or that, you know, we never went to the moon, like all those sort of things. There are people that actually believe those sort of things. And all he's saying there is that, you know, you can believe whatever you want. It doesn't matter. It's not going to change whether autism really is caused by these sort of things. So the scientific reality isn't changed by your wacky beliefs. I mean, I haven't read the context of what you're, where you got that from, but knowing him, knowing his work reasonably well.
Yes, he's often debating the conspiracy theorists and the flat earthers. And
he does like that topic.
But, I mean, there's an interesting belief. So, yes, so you're saying if you're a flat earther, that's actually not really going to change anything. It doesn't really have much of a consequence or effect.
And it's the same with, like, really weird stuff, like in quantum mechanics, which is just mind-boggling sort of stuff that, you know, there's particles that can be in two places at once or that can tunnel from one piece of space in Los Angeles and then can just turn up in New York, like, literally an instant later and, like, faster than what the speed of light can travel. So there's just no way that it could have gone between that distance in it, but it does. And so that doesn't make sense to our brain, but it's real. And it happens.
And like you can observe something which is a wave and then a particle depending on when you observed it. You know, it's...
Yep. So scientific reality doesn't give two hoots about whether we agree with it or not.
Can you believe in science?
I think you can believe in the scientific method, in the idea that evidence is important and that you don't believe something until it's been proven. You don't just believe it because of personal experience, Chris, or because you've grown up in it, or because your parents hold those beliefs and have told you forever. You know, I think those things are really important, and a lot of Christians would agree with all those things too.
So what you said earlier, that you don't believe till there is evidence.
Yeah.
Because I'm interested in how your beliefs, you know, take shape into, well, there was a quote, don't know if it came originally from Gandhi, but Gandhi did use it, which was, I guess it's sort of about our beliefs and our values form the foundation of who we are. And this quote is about sowing and reaping. So, you know, what you put into the field and, you know, and then what you take out. So you sow a thought, you reap an action, you sow an action, you reap a habit, you sow a habit, you reap a character, you sow a character, you reap a destiny. And it all stems from your beliefs. So I'm interested in how your beliefs sort of work their way through to what sort of a life you have and, you know, what makes you tick and what you end up doing. So if you don't believe till there is evidence, how's that play out in the long run? I don't know if that's a bit too vague a question.
I think that would make a beautiful wall art.
What, that quote?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's printed out.
I bet it is.
It's a bit like a creed that I try and live by. That's why it's just there on my...
So you want to have beliefs that will lead to positive actions.
Yes.
So you choose to have beliefs that will lead to positive actions.
Yeah, I mean, you can work backwards. You can, yeah. What's more important to me is the character bit, you know, who am I? So
yeah.
And what sort of a person do I want to be? And so what sort of beliefs are going to shape that?
You can't just believe things that make you feel good about yourself or about the world. Like if you come across a text message that your wife has sent to another man saying, hey baby, let's hook up later, then you don't just want to ignore that and go, well, that doesn't fit with the world that I want to believe in, so I'm just going to ignore that was there and I'm just going to carry on with my day. Like, you wouldn't do that. I'm sure
no.
You wouldn't, and I'm certain I wouldn't.
Absolutely not.
So just because something isn't pleasant doesn't mean you just don't believe it. Like, I wish my bank balance was higher, but, you know, there's not much point me wishing that it was different.
I actually don't believe life is meant to be this whole pleasant, shiny, happy thing anyway. So,
but you'd like it to be.
Maybe. I often remember back when I used to pray that people would be, you know, say, oh, you should pray for this person. You know, they're going on this new part of their life, whatever, and you should be praying for them that it's all going to be nice and sweet and happy and all work out for them.
Yeah, it will.
And I sort of kept thinking, no, that's not really what I want to pray for. I sort of want to pray that it's really hard and they really struggle and they grow.
You're a bastard.
So I did feel like...
Don't ever pray for me.
I did feel like that. Not necessarily really hard, you know. I wasn't like praying that...
They get cancer and die.
No, it wasn't like that, but...
Just that they get cancer and then it gets healed.
Well, prayer was a weird thing. We'll probably have to get into that in another podcast because I didn't really like asking for anything. I didn't really understand that.
You can convince God, can't you?
No.
He probably hasn't thought of some things, Chris.
No, if God knows me, then God knows my heart. I don't really understand why I need to ask. I think prayer was more about us than it is about him. So
yeah, it helps focus you.
Yes. And I think it's the same with, like you said earlier, that God doesn't need someone to worship him/her. Worship was more for humans to, again, help focus them. Because I never really understood it. I didn't enjoy singing songs in church. And what I did enjoy was the sciencey stuff and looking at the universe and the planets and the orbits of everything and how it just a feeling of awe. That feeling of awe was what I considered my form of worship.
So we agree that beliefs do affect actions, don't we?
Oh, okay, good. I was hoping you agreed that that was the case.
Oh, yeah. To me, that's obvious.
Because you say in one sense that you don't believe, but I believe people have beliefs.
Yeah, everyone has beliefs. But like when you say that, I think you mean like religious beliefs, whereas I'm talking more broadly.
I do mean more broadly because I believe that it's sort of like science in the sense that there is the physics of cause and effect, you know. So for every action, there's an opposite, you know, reaction. So the things that we believe inform the things that we think about, which inform the things that we do. Everything has consequences. I believe that our beliefs matter. So it's important to figure out what you believe.
Yeah, okay. So obviously we agree that beliefs are really important and they lead to how we view the world and how we behave in the world. And there's the examples that we all would have heard of, like the Westboro Baptist Church in the United States, the group that sort of stands out the front of funerals of homosexuals and dead soldiers and holds up those signs saying God hates fags and that sort of stuff. Obviously, their actions are driven by those beliefs that they get from their faith. Obviously, the Amish get their beliefs from their faith. They need to disconnect from the world because it's a place of evil and where they can be led astray. Groups like ISIS that obviously believe that all the wacky things that are in Islam about, you know, they behead apostates, they throw homosexuals off the top of the tallest building in their town, they stone women caught in adultery, all that sort of stuff. And these things, like, they are interpretations of their religions, but they're not necessarily perversions of them. They're pretty reasonable interpretations of them. So, like, in...
Matter of opinion, isn't it?
Yeah, but you can say, let me give you an example. So in the Hadith number 4447, which I know is one of your favourites, Chris. So in that, Muhammad says that whomever you find doing these actions, meaning homosexuality, kill the one doing it and the one it's done to. So if you're a follower of Islam, it's sort of hard to get around that. That's fairly blunt. And then, so in Romans chapter 1 verse, this is the Christian Bible now, Chris, in case you're confused. Romans chapter 1 verses 25 to 32, it says, they exchanged the truth about God for a lie and worshipped and served created things rather than their creator, who is forever praised. Amen. Because of this, God gave them over to shameful lusts. Even their women exchanged natural sexual relations for unnatural ones. In the same way, the men also abandoned natural relations with women and were inflamed with lust for one another. Men committed shameful acts with other men and received in themselves the due penalty for their error. Although they knew God's righteous decree that those who do such things deserve death, they not only continue to do these things, but also approve of those who practice them.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. It was more that you were saying the words lust with such
lust.
Such passion. Yes, but go on. What were you going to say?
It's actually not funny that both the Quran
I'm very serious now.
And the Bible promote death for homosexuals, Chris.
No.
In this current environment that we're in at the moment, Chris, I can't believe you would be taking such a lighthearted approach to such a serious topic.
Thanks for the sarcasm. Yeah.
But seriously, yeah, that is sarcasm. Chris is actually a nice guy who doesn't want to kill homosexuals, believe it or not. But I think it is a important point to bring up that any religious document that was written 2,000 years ago has stuff in it that is, in my views, abhorrent. And so the Bible does pretty clearly say that those that do such things, meaning homosexuality, deserve death. You might say that's a strange interpretation of it or up for debate, but to me it's pretty obvious.
I would say a whole chunk of that is up for debate, and that's probably for another podcast.
Probably is. But you would acknowledge that may not be the reading you take from it, but it would be pretty reasonable to read that and go, God thinks homosexuals deserve death.
Yeah, sure.
If Christians believe that, now most of them don't, thankfully. Mm. Sadly, too many Muslims do believe those sort of things, but thankfully Christianity somehow has just ignored those parts of the Bible. But if you actually believe that, you can understand where Westboro Baptist Church come from. Mm. They're not lunatics. They're people who've read their Bible and know their Bible better than most people sitting in the back of the pew at their church. They know it better than them, and they are actually living out what is written there.
But fundamentalism, there's an issue there that I don't think they're that intelligent as what you're giving them. I think that there are motivations I see a lot in fundamentalism where they're trying to maintain some power, maintain the status quo. And so a lot of that anger and rage that comes out of them is, I don't know, I often find that an act of sort of impotence or something. There's a lot of ignorance, I feel. When you approach something with such a certainty and you're going to take such a literal reading, when there is certainty, a lot of people can gather around that because it's easy to unite and become this big tribe because it's very simple. But I just feel like it's a whole lot more complex than that. I can't speak for Hadith 444 or whatever that was. I'm not that familiar there. But with Christianity, there's some real issues with that interpretation. So I think if you're going to be informed by that, I think there's a lot more that you need to understand before you interpret that verse.
But it's pretty...
Why are you coming at this in such a, you know, sort of a literalist reading? I guess because you're saying it's how it makes these other people act.
Yeah, so like we're saying, beliefs affect your actions. And what I'm saying is there are verses in both the Islamic holy texts and the Christian holy texts that if you read them and just read them, you don't have to apply any sort of weird interpretations to them, which you do to make yourself feel better about Christianity. If you just read it straightforward, then it will lead you down some pretty scary places. And I don't think it's actually very helpful to label anyone that does that as fundamentalist. You're writing them off as being unintelligent without actually engaging the topic that this is a pretty serious interpretation of it. Like, I don't know how you would not think it's a serious one other than that it doesn't conform with what you want it to say.
There's a part of me which has to admire people who have a strong conviction. And, you know, like whenever you talk about radical believers, it's always this negative, you know, thing nowadays. Whereas I actually think that Jesus calls people to something radical. But it's radical in a way that's not going to harm other people. So, it is a radical way of life. And, you know, and I'm not that radical, not as radical as I'd like to be. It's still an ideal, not so much a value, and ideals can be elusive and perhaps unattainable, but still, you know, I don't know, still worth striving for and having a go at. So I can admire someone's conviction. I can understand we're all human beings. So if they are able to see something in that way and behave in that way, then that flaw or that... or that I have that capability within me as well. So I have to look at them and go, where does that behavior come from? And you know, why did they get to where they are? Are they suffering? Are they struggling? Are they? I don't see someone who's really reflected, who's really tried to work out what they believe. And this is the problem with the certainty of it all. I think certainty is dangerous. That's why I want to embrace doubt. That's one of the things that I believe, is that I need to embrace doubt. I need to try and strive for humility, which is a hard thing as well. But yeah, that group of Christians I don't like. I don't like other things like, you know, prosperity theology that's taught, the idea that, you know, if you're rich, God loves you, and if you're not, then, well, you can take from that what you will. I don't like the pastors who think that natural disasters are God saying something about homosexuality. You know, it's just, I can't prove anything more than they can prove. But I just find a lot of those beliefs a bit sort of childish, and not childish in the way that, you know, the Bible sometimes talks about having a perspective of God like that of a child. You know, that's sort of the innocent and the awe and everything, but childish as sort of, that you haven't really grown up, you haven't really approached critical thinking, I guess, and you haven't questioned yourself, you haven't questioned everything, you haven't thrown it all up in the air and smashed it and then picked up all the pieces and tried to discover it all anew. You can just be sold a particular story and then just go with it because it's easy. And but that's another scientific thing, is that we follow the path of least resistance. We do what's easy. So yeah, religion can be used for a lot of bad in the world, and has been used for a lot of bad, and will go on being used for a lot of bad. And I'm, again, not that big a fan of religion. It's a man-made set of rules that we live by. I care more about spirituality, but that depends on people's definition. If they want to say I'm religious, that's all right. I don't care. There is a difference for me between spirituality and religion. That doesn't have to be for other people.
It's a very catchy thing for Christians to say, I'm not religious, but I'm spiritual.
There's a part of me which would not like to call myself a Christian, because there is so much weight of abuse and destruction and pain that has been inflicted by that tradition. But there's also a part of me which feels like you need to own that and move forward. You need to, you know, try and rectify that. Just stepping away from it presently doesn't quite work. So
I think I'm hearing you correctly. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I think what I'm hearing you saying is that people that read those sort of verses and take them at face value are childish in the negative sense, not the positive biblical sense. Because that's pretty judgmental.
I know it is. That's the thing that I'm struggling with, is that I'm saying that. But it, for me, judgment, it doesn't say you shouldn't judge. We judge all the time.
Yeah.
We make judgments every day, every hour, but it's be careful. So don't judge lest ye be judged. Yeah, just know that when you judge others, you'll be judged too. So I don't like the fact that, you know, it's worrying me that I come out and say that, because, yeah, I'm opening myself up to this judgment of being this really judgmental person. That's something that I value, is I don't want to be a judgmental person. I want to be someone who is accepting of all people, which I do a lot of. This is one of the values that I have in my own role, in my own job as a youth worker, is I'm accepting people for who they are, and they come and talk to me, and it makes a difference to them. Makes a difference to me too. But I do accept people a lot, but there are times when I can be judgmental, and maybe I shouldn't be.
It's interesting, because when you read the verses where Jesus says things like love your enemy, or, you know, love your neighbor as yourself, those sort of things, you just accept them at face value. You go, yep, that's exactly what Jesus meant. He meant exactly what those words are. And you do that because that conforms to the way you already see yourself, and the way you already want to be as a human being, and the way you want to act in the world. Whereas when you come across verses that don't conform with how you see the world or want yourself to act in the world, then you start looking for, why doesn't this make sense? How does it what was God really saying here? Because he wasn't saying what's actually written there. He must have had some underlying meaning, whereas you don't do that searching for verses you already agree with. And so it ends up going into this idea that the beliefs we have impact how we experience the world, that if I believe that all Aboriginals are drunks and then I come across an Aboriginal isn't a drunk, well, then we just write that off as, oh, that's unusual, isn't it? They're normally always drunk. And then you come across one that is a drunk and then you just go, well, yeah, that's just like all of them. Whereas if you had the opposite belief that, you know, that's just a social stigma thing and it's not really true, and you came across someone that isn't drunk, you would go, yeah, see, they're not all drunks. And then if you came across one that is drunk, you'd just say, oh, well, that's just an outlier. The beliefs that we already have impact how we experience the world and the parts that the bits that we hold on to. And I think that's what you're doing with scripture. The bits that you agree with that fit with your picture of the world, you go, that's the true God and that's the true scripture and those are the important bits. And the bits that you disagree with that don't fit with that picture, you just say, who knows? It's a silly book just written by people 2,000 years ago. So really it's you that's the good person, Chris.
I admire you as a good person. And I was reading a bit of Bonhoeffer, which sort of made me think of you, which he said, one takes full responsibility for one's existence as though God did not exist, and in fully doing so, lives fully before God.
Yeah, there we go. What a guy.
You know, I wish I was sometimes more like Louis Theroux. He went into the Westboro Baptist Church.
Yeah.
And he didn't go in there to tell them what he thought of them. He went in there and he listened to them and he built relationships, and a bunch of them ended up leaving. How much did he have a part to play in their opening up there and seeing things differently for those people? I don't know. You sort of don't know what seeds you've sort of sown, but I like that style. I think that's the way to do it. If you go and tell people that they're childish, like I just did, then you're probably not going to build much of a bridge.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't really want to be that judgmental person.
One of Fred Phelps, he's the dude that founded Westboro Baptist Church. One of his granddaughters, actually I think 11 of his granddaughters have left the church, but one of them that I've heard, Megan Phelps Roper or something like that, she left the church and I heard her on a podcast talking about how the image that people outside the church have of people in the church is just so warped that the people inside the church are just the most loving, kind, beautiful people. But the only thing people see of them is that they picket funerals and say all these horrible things. But like if you're actually in the community, they're the most beautiful people. And so leaving that community is really difficult because you're not leaving people that are horrible. You're leaving people that are lovely and most kind and generous people you'll ever meet.
So, yeah, that's interesting. You can be a good person and you can still, I guess, believe the wrong thing, and that can harm others. The way I sort of see it is there are universal truths. There has to be. I don't know. Do you agree with that? There are universal truths?
Yeah, I do.
You do? We're searching for them. Now, you know, how do you figure out the ones without evidence is difficult.
Good
or,
luck.
Or not possible. But for me, some of it's right, some of it's wrong. That's, you know, why it matters. And some of it's helpful, some of it's unhelpful, and some can harm others. And they're the sort of, you know, like Westboro, I don't want to have those sort of beliefs that harm others. So my beliefs take shape in what I value, what I choose to consider is important. And I think part of my problem with that sort of certainty, you know, fundamentalist type views and certainty is that there can be a lot of conviction and there can be a lot of faith, but for me, where's the doubt and, you know, and where's the humility? So for me, I guess faith and doubt have to go together, and conviction and humility, they're not mutually exclusive. And it worries me when people haven't sort of like, you know, haven't reflected on it all.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying there, Chris. And I think along those lines, I want to be like Megan Phelps Roper, that granddaughter of Fred Phelps.
Like her?
Yeah, like her. I want to change my gender. No, I think she's a great example of why it isn't okay to simply know what we believe, but also why we believe it. I don't want to hold any erroneous or dangerous beliefs 1 second longer than I have to. And to do that, I think you have to be willing to update your beliefs the second you come across a better one. I want to know what I believe. I also want to know why I believe it and be ready to change those beliefs. I don't want to cling to any of the beliefs that I currently hold because I know that there's plenty of beliefs that I've held in the past that I've changed. I'm aware that I've been wrong in the past. And so with that understanding that I just presume there must be beliefs that I hold now that are wrong as well. I just don't know which ones they are. And
yeah, likewise. Yeah.
And so I think that's why, for me, conversations like these are critical and have always been helpful for me to see the world from other people's perspective and allow those sort of different worldviews to wash over your own worldviews, to critique your own worldviews, to allow yourself to be unsettled by an intelligent person who comes at the world from a different perspective. That's what I hope this podcast is like. I hope that's the sort of conversations we can continue to have and throw out to the interwebs.
Yeah, well, we're going to have a lot more conversations around this sort of stuff. And I like it. I like that we're talking about things that matter and beliefs. I want to stand for something. I too want to gather these beliefs around me and see, you know, do they serve me well? But just as importantly, do they serve others well? I guess that's the love your neighbor as yourself sort of bit. So, and like when I, you know, work with the young people I work with and find out what matters to them, there's like family and friends and community, the earth, justice, belonging, all of these things. These are the sort of things that I'm looking forward to talking about more on more of our podcasts.
Absolutely. Thank you for having this conversation again, Chris.
Thank you, Nick.
And thank you for listening. We'll see you next time in the Eternity Ward.
Outstanding.
Yes.
That's the Nick word.
Yeah.
Outstanding.
It was at the end of the first one. I noticed that.
God here again. Are you shaking your head incredulously or nodding in approval? Well, if you got something out of this episode, you could really help those poor idiots by contributing to or supporting the Eternity Ward. You can leave reviews on iTunes or wherever you listen to it. You can share it on social media or discuss it in your blog, podcast, or fellowship group. Subscribe, like, nod your head, raise your fist, send a hallelujah. I don't know, but don't send a prayer because I'm kind of busy right now. Join the discussion in the comments section, ask questions, and do come back and join us again here on the Eternity Ward. We'll be right back.